IBS.
You be what?
Irritable bowel syndrome. Is there a men's room down here?
Oh, come on. You shouldn't be using the men's room now.
Or a ladies' room. Quickly. IBS.
Man, if you knew you had the runs, why didn't you shit back at the house?
Quickly.
You don't want Aaron finding your stinking ass on the crapper?
No choice. It's a medical condition. Quickly.
You are a disgusting individual. You know that? Come on, follow me.
Welcome to What the Nostalgia, the podcast where we go back and review movies from our formative years on up to our late teens. At the end of the podcast, we ask ourselves, were we looking at the content through rose-colored lens, or is it as nostalgic as before? We're your hosts, Jarrell.
And I'm Jamel.
And this is What the Nostalgia. Jamel, what we got?
We have today the Lady Killers. This was released March 26, 2004, directed by the Coen brothers. For the cast, we have Tom Hanks, Marlon Wayans, J.K. Simmons, Ira P. Hall. And the budget, they had a $35 million budget and grossed over $76 million worldwide.
Okay. I'll ask you all
this. And I gotta say, man, this is something I haven't seen. I never saw this one, man.
I was just about to ask.
I know we were talking about this. Yeah, I know we were talking about that on the last pod, man. And I was trying to remember if I seen it or not. I saw the poster plenty of times. I just never watched the film. So this was another first for me watching this one.
Okay, yeah. Hey, this is a movie, you know, that I can remember seeing back in 2004. I mean, I didn't see it in theaters, but I remember, you know, maybe my mother had rented it on DVD or whatever, and I remember watching it way back then. I know I've seen it maybe once or twice since then, but yeah. I've seen it a couple of times, man. You know, I forgot... I was thinking to myself before I watched it, I was like, man, this feels like a Coen Brothers film, kinda. And then, you know, it hit me where I was like, oh, actually, never mind. I already knew that it was a Coen Brothers film. But you know, you could tell though, it's just you get that sense. Like if you didn't know, I mean, if you like are aware of the Coen Brothers you know, filmography or whatever, or catalog, you'll be able to tell. And this is definitely
They got a certain style for sure when they do their films.
Yeah.
But sure. I will say as well, I got on the Coen Brothers pretty late too, because one of their films, what put me on to the Coen Brothers, you actually put me on to the Coen Brothers because I think it was Fargo you was telling me about. I think the show, and then I ended up, you told me it was a movie, and that's what put me on the Coen Brothers, and I was a fan ever since.
Right. No doubt about it.
So,
shoot, we going to it? Are we starting?
Let's get it, man. Let's get it. So, I got to bring up, we starting this hot, man, you know, with a theory, man. I got a theory for you, you know.
Okay.
Soul Food Grandma, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to bring this to you, man. What if she was living a double life, you know? What if she faked her death and she moved away because she was just getting tired of cooking for everybody? You know, she wanted to be by herself. She started a new life. If she was similar, she wasn't as, you know, she was a little more calmed down and I guess soul food, but at the same time, she still had some similar values in this film.
Jamel, I know we do a lot of theories on this podcast, but this might quite possibly be the worst.
I took a risk there, man. You know, as I was writing that note, I said to myself, man, this is either gonna go great, it's gonna be genius, or I'm gonna get roasted, completely roasted for this idea. So, you know, I'm cool either way. I weighed my options, you know.
Hey, you know what? I respect that. I do. I respect you for that. The fact that you had to think about it just a little bit. Like, yeah, this might be awful. It is awful.
No chance.
No chance at all. It is awful. Like, I mean, just thinking about the fact that you think that could be plausible? that she just got tired of cooking and faked her own death. I mean, did she fake her leg getting cut off? Did she go the extra mile and actually get amputated just to? I mean, that she number one. I mean, that for one is off because she clearly walking fine in this movie.
Correct.
So you think she pulled a Houdini move and just faked the death and or pulled a Tupac?
The leg was fake. Her leg was fake in this film. She had a fake leg.
I just want you to leave the theories for the professionals, all right?
That's what I'm going with, man. Look, the way I look at it, we got room for one bad theory every 10 reviews, all right? So that'll give us a little room. You done already had yours.
Yeah.
With Antoine Fisher, all right? So,
yeah,
so you got to cut me some slack on
it. Yeah, but look how much I pieced together. Look how much... Like I said, plausibility was into what I was saying. How many things I brought. Do you know how long I was going on about that theory? Come on, man. I pieced together a lot. But for you to just come up with, oh, they got tired of cooking. I don't think she got tired of cooking. She seemed to enjoy that.
Well, it could have been a combination of things. That's all I'm saying. It you know, just the cooking aspect was just one thing I'm bringing to the table. You know? See what I did there?
Yeah, I saw it. I definitely saw it. And I wish I hadn't. But.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look.
Hey,
look,
but, hey, you know what? Hey, I'm going to respect your theory. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just forget about the theory. You know, we're not even going to cut this part out, you know, because I want the fans to hear our theories, every single one of them, good and the bad. So, you know, I might have one or two that might agree with me or see my point, but if not, it's cool too.
I just wonder, before we got to this, were you just like, yeah, I got a heavy one. Yeah. Oh yeah, this one's gonna knock him out the park.
Nah, I actually was leaning like, I'd say 60-40, and this was gonna bomb, actually.
You know what, this is how I really imagine how you did. Cause I was really coming with some heavy hitters the past few episodes with the theories,
right.
And I imagine you just welling up with envy inside, and at some point, you was at the crib and you just said to yourself out of nowhere, "You think you're better than me?" Something like that. Yeah, then you
like, I gotta come with something, right?
Yeah,
I gotta keep up.
I gotta craft something, and
exactly.
And this is what you came with, you know. So
this is what I came with.
Hey, yeah.
This is what I came with. Well, you know, hey, I'm 0 for no. Actually, I'm about 1-for-1 with theories right now. So, you know, still 500 record. You know,
1-for-1, but it's a 500 record, huh?
Okay. 500 record right now, you know. So that's that. We'll roll with that. But anyway, let's move forward, man. You know, we kind of hit on these brothers, you know, in the opening segment before we got into the review. The Coen brothers, who are the directors of this film, they have a lot of heavy hitters, man. You know, they have a lot of classic movies, you can say. They have some great movies, you can say. And then they have some bad movies, you know. And I don't want to move too far ahead, but I just got to say, this is one of them. I'll just say that on the top. But yeah, I mean, one thing I noticed about them, it seems like from the movies I've seen, they have or give out some of the weirdest names, man, I noticed in some of their films. You know, either the names are hard to pronounce or it seems like a random name. And I had to ask myself, I was like, I wonder if that's their thing, like one of their things that they do, you know, like do they try to come up with these crazy names as a part of their style, you know? I was just trying to figure out if that's something that, you know, they kind of attach to themselves.
I'm going to be honest, I really don't know. I mean, nothing else comes to mind as far as like weird names. You know, so I may not be with you there or may not know exactly what you talking on that. I mean, the only thing I'll say is Gawain. That's the only one that I'll say what. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, that is one. That's like
who, one. Like who named that character that? Gawain.
Right.
Other than that, other than that, I don't know. But you know, you may have noticed that, and I may not have, so I don't know. But they definitely got different things that it's like their calling card for a Coen film. Here's one thing that I've always noticed in Coen Brothers film, and I can't pull every example, but I know I've seen it in multiple of their films. They have their characters repeat lines like a bunch. Like, I don't know if you ever noticed that. I don't know how many Coen Brothers films you've seen, but they'll have like certain characters just like repeating lines quite a bit. I always noticed that in Coen Brothers films. Like in this film, you got J.K. Simmons, right? He says this multiple times, just to eat. Yep, easiest thing in the world. Easiest thing in the world, or whatever. Like, that's just his go-to thing. I believe, you know, George Clooney's character in, like, Old Brother, Where Art Thou? I think he had, like, maybe two lines that he kept repeating throughout the film or something like that. Yeah. He would say something like, I'm a Dapper Dan man or something like that. He just, it was like, throughout the film, he would repeat that. There was some other line too, but there's like other parts in different films. I'm telling you, if you ever watch some of their films, you'll see that. You'll see that they repeat lines, and I guess
it's almost like they're giving their main characters certain catchphrases.
Yeah, exactly. Catchphrases. That's what I was looking for. I've always noticed that that's what they do. So that's a staple, I guess, for the Coen Brothers, and then also this. You'll notice this in almost all their films, like just a small town setting. A lot of times, like a Midwestern type of vibe or whatever. They love that. Right. They don't deal with the big city. They say, look, we're not dealing with, that's off limits. Okay, we're dealing with the quietness and the slowness of this small town, just almost in everything that they do. So. You know a Coen film when you see one, basically, is what we're saying.
Right. They do a lot of adaptations, too, right? I mean, this Lady Killers, they redid this movie, right? I read that it was an original version from, like, 1950-something.
I was going to... You know what? You just reminded me. I almost forgot. Because I watched that after I watched this. And, it is a remake of a 1955 film. And you know what's crazy is that film, The Lady Killers in 1955, that has like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And you know what I'm saying? And this one, I believe, is like at a 54%. But
it's in that range. It's definitely in that range.
But I'm gonna let you know something. I enjoyed this movie a whole lot better than the original. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna let you know.
I mean, you know my stance. I mean, and this is not hate against all old movies. So don't put me in a box. Yeah. But majority, you know how I feel about movies, you know, 1960 on back. Like, that doesn't surprise me when you say that. Because I just already have a certain feeling for old films like that it's hard to watch for me, you know.
You said 1960 on back. You mean like 1980 on back? You don't get down with hardly anything outside of Star. I guess maybe the first Star Wars. You don't get down with anything past that. Name me one film. I'm gonna put you on blast right now. Name me one film.
Star Wars.
I just said besides Star Wars, maybe one film that you get down with of the 70s and past.
Godfather.
You get down with the Godfather?
Yeah. Okay. When have I ever dissed the Godfather?
All right. I'll take your word for it.
Let me see. Up in Smoke, Cheech and Chong.
Okay, I've actually never seen those.
I've seen one. I think it was the first one.
Okay.
When was Taxi Driver released? Was that the 80s or the...
No, that was the 70s.
Okay. 76. I will admit, you put me on to that movie, but I do like that film.
Okay. All right. Well, you proved me wrong. You proved me wrong. All right. I guess you get down. I guess the 70s is your limit.
Now, I'm not saying majority, I would say probably of the 70s movies I probably don't like, but there is some in the bunch that I can get down with.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. But yeah, I did. Like I said, I went and watched that because I did just want to see like the... I don't know. It's just something about the original version of some things, man. It's just interesting to see. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I did.
Plus, you do kind of, at times, you want to see how well they did at remaking it, you know, with the characters, the story, and all that.
Exactly.
The changes that might have been made and all that good stuff.
As I was watching the original, I was trying to put together, you know, one-to-one, like, okay, who is the Tom Hanks? Who is the Marlin and stuff like that? I was able to, all right, it was easy to piece together who was the main character. That's easy to do. And it was easy to figure out who was the dumb character. But the other three, I couldn't tell. I didn't know who was who. Who was the Marlin? Really? Yeah, who was the... Well, the general, who was the J.K. Simmons of the crew. You know, they added some. They did add some new stuff to the story. I'm just gonna say that. And
okay.
Yeah, you know they updated.
Yeah, that is definitely something they're known for because they took. I still think to this day, man, and I'm pretty sure we'll get to this film sooner or later. But the fact that they took the Odyssey, that story. And adapted into that movie of Old Brother, Where Art Thou? That's still genius to me.
One of my
how they took such an old story. Yeah, they took such an old story and made it into present day, or at that time, present day, and made it into a real life story. I thought that was pretty cool, man, to this day.
That's exactly what I was talking about in the Antoine Fisher story, where we was talking about how, you know, stories can... connect. I mean, you can get a whole nother genre out of this genre, out of this story,
right?
Or whatnot. Right. So yeah, that is amazing. But yeah, the Coen brothers, man, they got some good, you know, they got some decent films. Now this, I think for a lot of people, is like considered their worst film.
I want to believe that
people view it as that. Now again, like I said, I don't think this is bad. I mean, it's their worst in the sense of, yeah, they got so many other good projects. But I don't think this is bad. We're going to differ on this one. You know, you might be surprised, but again.
Because I got another question I want to ask you as far as the Coen brothers. So I'm going to bring this other director into the picture. So is this kind of like their Death Proof? Like Tarantino's Death Proof, but I know how much you hate Death Proof, so I don't even know if that's a good comparison.
No, that's a good comparison. That's a good comparison. I didn't like Death Proof, like you said, from Tarantino, but it is a good comparison. It's very similar. Okay. Yeah.
Puts it into perspective. Now, what I wanted to ask you before we move forward. Do you see any similarities? Because sometimes when I watch Coen Brothers films, I see similarities in the way they do their dialogue as far as them and Tarantino. As far as not the way they write it, but as far as how they stretch out their dialogue. It seems like their scenes, they try to hold their dialogue longer than a lot of other directors. To me, the Coen Brothers fall in that same category. I don't know if you feel that way or if you notice that.
Look, you know my style, man. Dialogue is like one of my number one things that I pay attention to. But somehow, I'm not gonna lie, when it comes to Coen Brothers films, I don't know if I pay attention to it that much when it comes to their films. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Now, yeah, so I may not know exactly what you're saying when it comes to this, but I don't know. I guess
not necessarily this film as much, but the one film that comes to mind is Fargo. I feel like in Fargo, they really had scenes where they stretched out the dialogue in every scene, you know, to kind of set things up, just like Tarantino does in a way.
Well, like I said, you know, again, I may not have paid attention to that, but I still do love the dialogue. I already mentioned it. I love the fact how they have characters with catchphrases that come back into play all the time, mm-hmm. you know. But
right.
You know, look, in this film, you know, there's some bad things in this film. I'm not going to say this was like perfect. There was some dumb dialogue that I was like, wow, that was just terrible. In the scene where they're at the Waffle Hut and Tom Hanks' character is like, we must have waffles. We must have waffles and wherewith. And I'm, you know, that's his whole thing. He's just really wordy. But I couldn't get down with that. But there's another scene though, where he has some type of dialogue, man. I think this is where they were planning. When they were planning the heist or whatever, they was like down in the root cellar. You get what I'm saying? I'm pulling it up right now. Do you remember where he had the map and he said something like, and it was just an interesting line. It was just interesting lines to me. Where Tom Hanks' character is talking to Marlon Wayne's character. He's like, and what to flog a horse that if not dead is in mortal danger of expiring? Does this? It was just kind of a crazy tongue or whatever. But again, that's just a part of his this guy's character. He just speaks in this, you know,
right.
English. It's like the old English or whatever.
Yeah, I did notice that. I noticed that as well.
I like that line, and I've always liked that line since I heard it back in 2004. but again, you do have some other.
Did you have it hanging on your wall as a kid, like when you were younger?
Oh, you think did you type it out and put it? No, I can't. I can't say I did that. I wasn't that into dialogue that early, but I just liked. It was just something that kind of stuck in my mind when he said it. I was like, okay, that's an interesting sentence that you just put together there.
Yeah, in that situation too as well. It seems a little out there, but yeah, I definitely did notice that. But I gotta bring up the scene of two robbers, man, going to rob the general, you know, towards the beginning of the film. When I saw that, I was like, man, the way that they got treated trying to rob them at this, it was a donut shop, right? Wasn't it like a donut shop?
Right.
I was just sitting there like, man, they had to have some kind of warning not to go to that place. Like, the way the general came out, he had no fear at all. That was kind of his character anyway throughout the film. He had no kind of emotion. He barely talked. You know, he had no fear to him. In the way that he handled those two robbers, I was like, man, it had to be word going around, you know, in that city. Like, that donut shop right there, that donut shop is the one that you do not want to rob. But they did it anyway.
Yeah, they came in talking about, we want that donut money. And right. I don't know, man, maybe, you know, maybe they hadn't been robbed like that. Maybe they, you know, maybe this is the first time. Maybe they was like, hey, we gonna try this guy. But that donut shop, look, that whole plaza, it instantly reminded me of Holy Moly's donut shop. I don't know if you, yeah, it, that's what it,
I
feel like they filmed it in the same spot.
I was just about to say, bro, it does seem very similar. It really did. That whole plaza. We got to look that up to see.
Yeah, yeah. Holy
but now that I think about it, nah, because I think I looked it up. Well, I didn't look that specific thing up, but I saw something where they were thanking the people of Mississippi, a town of Mississippi or something like that. And I'm pretty sure Friday was shot in California, Friday after next. But it does look eerily similar, though.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, you know, trying to get that donut money, man. Hey, a lot of people come in and you know, buy them donuts, man. So, you know.
They was probably
rolling in the dough. You see what I just did there? Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to even the lame count.
I'm just glad you. Right. I'm glad you did that. Now we're on the same level.
You see how I had your back now? I said, all right, he came up with something straight stupid. Now let me let him off the hook.
Let me see what I can do.
You know? So there you go.
I appreciate that, man.
I got your back, man. I got your back.
For sure, man. For sure. No doubt. Now, moving forward, man, let's hit on these characters, man. We spoke on them here and there, certain ones, but they definitely had a cast of characters here that, to me, for the job that needed to be done, they were pretty incompetent at trying to complete this heist, you know. That was their ultimate goal. Like we said, the general who owned the donut shop, you know, he was kind of, like I said, a fearless type of man that was a few words. You had Tom Hanks' character who was pretty much the leader of the group. You know, he was the one that talked people into doing things. You had Marlon's character which I thought I was watching the Wayans brothers, you know, as he was acting certain times. You had a few other ones, J.K. Simmons' character. I don't even really know. I guess he was more so the rigging guy that would rig the bombs and stuff in the crew. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's what he was. And then they had one other character who was considered the muscle of the group. And, you know, but he was pretty much, you could tell from how they set his character up, that he wasn't really suitable to be their muscle. You know, if something really went down, he just was built for muscle, but he wasn't really, I guess, built like that.
He was built for it? What do you mean? They literally, they wasn't using him for his mind. They were just using him literally for his muscle. How was he not? He did all the digging. He clearly was built for it.
But the way they were setting him up, not just, I don't think, for the digging, but also, like, the security purposes as well.
They didn't set him up as security. They literally set him up just to be the brunt worker. The one who was going to do the heavy lifting. They didn't set him up anything more than that.
Because I think the reason for that is because they didn't really get into a situation where they had to defend themselves. The heist actually went off pretty, we'll get to that later on, but the heist went pretty smoothly. You know, they didn't really run into any problems. But that was just my perspective of it. I feel like they had them there more for just the digging.
Yeah, that's exactly what they had him for. Did they say anything about him being security? They didn't say no lie like that. I don't know how you pulled that out. If anything,
well, I think they said the muscle. He said the muscle, so I wasn't just tying that to just the digging. That was just how I saw it.
No, when you gotta relate it to the scheme that's going on. They had him. He was saying like the dumb brute, it was talking about he was the one who was going to be doing. Come on, man. You got to understand in the context of what they're doing. He clearly was.
Yeah, I understand
If anything, he's the one who did his job the most perfectly out of everybody else.
I don't think you understand what I'm saying. I'm not dismissing that fact, though. I'm not saying he wasn't there to dig. I understand that part. He was there to dig, and that was a part of the muscle aspect. But I'm saying as well, he was there as a muscle just in case something went wrong. Maybe he was there to intimidate or get them out of the situation. That's just how I viewed it.
Okay, you know.
I could be wrong, but that's just because when you hear the muscle in a lot of films, it's about being the protection.
Well,
which in this film, I understand it was more than just about that. because he was the digger of the tunnel, but it's more than just one definition of when people say you're the muscle.
Well, here's the thing. I can't even confirm whether or not they called him the muscle or not.
Yeah, because when he was introducing everybody downstairs, that was one of the lines. I said security, but he did say the muscle. He was saying the muscle. Tom Hanks.
Maybe, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess we took it differently. I feel like I immediately knew that he was just saying they needed somebody dumb enough. You know what I'm saying? He clearly was not supposed to be the thinker, and all he was supposed to do was just use his strength. That's it. When they said muscle, literally the muscle. Use your strength to get this job done. You're going to be digging this stuff. It take a lot of muscle to, you know, that's tough. That's the only way I took it. I ain't take it figuratively as in like, yeah, you're going to go beat up some people for us in case we, you know, we need you. Nah, just literally, you the strongest. Get the digging, sucker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the reason why I said it is because he didn't clarify either side. So even though he did dig the tunnel, just like you say, he didn't say, oh, you're going to be our security. He didn't necessarily say you're going to dig this hole. He just literally said you're the muscle. So the muscle can entail more than just digging the hole if they need muscle for other situations. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
You know? But did you have anything else on the characters, man? I don't know if you noticed anything particular about any of the main characters there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a ragtag group of characters that they piece together. I don't know exactly how he put them all together, you know what I'm saying? But obviously you got the leader as Tom Hanks, who is this just overly wordy person. And as someone who can get kind of wordy sometimes, even I was like, yo, all right, you're going a little overboard with the vocabulary. I was like, dial it back, Tom Hanks. This is one of my dial it back moments in the film. I was like, all right, you can, you know, didn't need all of that. But so you got his character. I wanted to talk about just like maybe kind of two in general. Let's talk about Marlon Wayans for a little bit. He provided some comedy, but I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I was conflicted in this performance because I gotta go here. I feel like Marlon Wayans will constantly play buffoon characters, on a constant basis. Like, yep, I'm doing this character, like. And I'm like, dang, man, do you go outside of that? I mean, I guess he played a junkie in Requiem for a Dream. I don't know how much better that is, but I'm just like, wow, man, is this literally what you do? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, it's almost like this tight cast or something.
You know, yeah, almost. I mean, when I think about his character, man, there's a line that he says in the Wayans Brothers that just always stuck with me, and I feel like this is his whole character. Just like his whole career is summed up by this character. I mean, by this line. I can't remember what Sean said to him. He said something to him. He said something like, yeah, don't be acting ignorant or something like that. And then Marlon responds, he was like, I'm ain't. Something like that. And I'm like, yep, that pretty much is the, I feel like sums you up. Your acting, your whole thing. That's what you, I feel like that's you in every movie or in everything that you do. I'm ain't.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
So you got that.
That's what I was saying. I don't mean to interrupt. That's what I was saying, man. It felt like I was watching the Wayans Brothers, like him playing like the same character in a way from that, you know, between that and I saw a little bit of Don't Be a Menace While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. I saw a little bit of that. I mean, it was just all the same stuff from him in a way.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. There was I did laugh at some of the moments. Some of the stuff was comedic. Mm. I mean, I laughed at the part where they was in the Waffle Hut, and when he pulled the gun on J.K. Simmons' character, and he's holding it. He's holding it with like two fingers, like it's a dirty tissue.
Right.
like it's a damn dirty tissue the way he's holding the gun.
Right.
Talking about what?
Like, you know how proper people they point their pinky out when they drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what a baby think of.
I ain't gonna lie, that baby laughed. That was funny. But other than that, yeah, like I said, it's just like I'm like, dang man, like did you have to play so many buffoon characters just all day? But I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I read that in an article too, because I was doing a little research on the film, and there was an article kind of talking about how they felt about the film, and they included that in the article. It was like Marlon Wayans basically played the same character he plays in everything else. Like they literally had wrote an article saying that, you know, so it's not just us that saw that or noticed that.
Yeah, you know, it just can be a little sad sometimes, man. In that regard. But moving on from that character, I'm going to J.K. Simmons. I've tried to put you on to the show Oz before. You know, I don't think you've watched it yet. But it's a crazy prison show. You know, I feel like it was the beginning of what they call the golden era of television. I feel like that show was like one of the beginning the starts. It came out like 97 on HBO, 1997. It's really good. And J.K. Simmons, he's playing like this Nazi guy in prison in that show. I just thought it was funny to, in this movie, him being a former freedom rider coming from that. Like I said, if you saw the character in Oz, it would just be kind of crazy to see him as like I said, a former freedom rider in this movie. So that kind of, you know, that was a little interesting. But I like this character, and you know, him and Marlon, they had a lot of beef. They just could not they had a whole bunch of beef with each other. But I thought that was an interesting, you know, interesting character that they threw in there. As character, yeah, I really didn't care about the general. I didn't get a whole lot from him or Lump, you know what I'm saying, just being like I said, the dumb brute. But the professor, you know, again, his thing is he's like a con artist basically, you know what I'm saying,
right,
and
right.
He knows how to get over, and I found for the professor, I just found it funny in the particular scene towards the end of the movie, where, again, I already said how wordy he can be and verbose, basically. Like, he's just using all the vocabulary that he can use. And this scene, I like this scene, though, at the end, where Lump has a change of mind. Like, they're trying to kill Miss Munson. They're trying to kill Miss Munson, and Lump has a change of mind, and he's basically like, he was like, it was gonna come down to the professor, and Lump is like, I can't allow you to do that. And the professor is like taken aback. He's like, allow and everything. And he had all this vocabulary, but at that time he's basically like, he didn't have no words. He was like, you stupid boy. He was like, you very stupid boy. It's like all his vocabulary leapt out of him, and he literally was at a loss for words, like at the most literal sense of that phrase. So I like that.
And I think it's because out of all the people he felt he can talk into doing it, that would have been the easiest person to get it done, you know, for him to talk into doing that. And that was the one person, because everybody else, when they drew the straw,
right,
they, even if they didn't want to do it, they went through with it just because of the professor's influence, you know. But Lump, I mean, him being the dumbest one out of the crew, you would think the professor could talk him into doing it easily, you know.
Yeah, they didn't even draw straws. He just went straight to him and was like, all right, it's your turn. I was like, wow. I was like, that's how little respect you had for Lump. or whatnot. Right. But yeah, man. But Lump proved to, you know, be a little too dumb and wound up shooting himself, basically. Yep. So that's how that worked. But yeah,
I gotta ask you something. Well, not really ask, but I gotta bring up a point too. I feel like they missed out on the opportunity, man, to make the professor look a little more shiesty, man. Don't you think he should have had one gold tooth, man? Don't you think that would have added an element of just shiestiness to him?
Well,
I feel like that was missing, man.
Hey, you know what? I like that. Yeah, they could have had. Yeah, they could have put that in there. Or I don't know, maybe a ring, a certain
something,
type of
man.
Ring for the figure, but a gold tooth would have did it well. That canine tooth,
right?
Or whatever. That would have went well. That would have went well. That's a good observation.
Yeah, they missed that opportunity, man. But yeah, let's hit on a couple more characters that we kind of talked about her a little bit here and there. She was Miss Munson, and basically, you know, she was the owner of the house that these guys were basically trying to get into this boat, this cruise ship, to kind of rob. And she was one of those characters that, you know, she would go to the cops here and there and complain about stuff, music and stuff, which at the beginning of the film, I found it funny. It was almost like they had never heard of hip-hop music before, the way she was explaining it. I thought that scene was kind of funny. But the cops never really took her serious either, because you kind of find out later on she's like talking, having conversations with her dead husband, and you know, they just think she talks a lot and she's never right about anything. She's just complaining about nonsense, which later in the film, it comes back around, which we'll hit on later on. It comes back around in her favor, you know, which I thought was pretty cool as well. But I think you had another character you wanted to hit on in this film that I didn't really notice, but you had kind of mentioned it to me earlier.
Yeah. Before I get to that, though, I'm going to talk about the Miss Munson a little bit. Yeah, it's like I said, it's the same way they set her up in the original. Like I said, it's a white lady in the original film. But, you know, you could tell the police station is kind of laughing at her a little bit. And she came in talking like about a spaceship or something like that. And yeah, you could tell that, I mean, in the 2004 version that we're reviewing now, like, yeah, that she has constantly bombarded this police department, I guess, with ridiculous stories and can you come get my cat out the tree, and the police are just tired of dealing with her. And the comedian George Wallace, you know, he has some kind of funny parts in the movie where like he's doing that fake laugh and then stopping like
right,
you know,
right.
What I'm saying, like when she turns her back and stuff like that, like he's just sick of her pretty much at this point. So I get that. But yeah, who I was gonna bring up, I was talking to you earlier, man. I said there was a reincarnation. I done brought this movie back full circle like a bunch of times over the last past episodes. But Antoine Fisher, there was a reincarnation of Mrs. Tate in this film, man. Okay,
you gotta explain this, man.
Yeah, yeah. You probably thought that I really meant like she was in this film. She's not in this film. Okay, but do you remember the scene where Marlon, he's going to go kill Miss Munson, and he has a flashback to his mother? He's having that flashback to his mother, and she's like letting into him. She's saying a whole bunch of wild stuff that brought me back to Mrs. Tate. I like it. Just seemed like that's what I was talking about. I just felt like that was Mrs. Tate reincarnated in this film.
Okay. Yeah. See, I thought I had missed, like, she maybe was one of the church ladies and I didn't notice.
Nah.
So that's okay.
Hey, but you know what's crazy?
That kid.
No. I'm sorry. No, I was just gonna say, you know what's crazy? It's just the fact that we talking about, you know, we just recently reviewed Antoine Fisher, and we continuously talking about Mr. Tate. And I recently started rewatching Oz, and an episode came up where the literal Mrs. Tate was in that episode. And I was like, wow, that's crazy that she popped up.
That's wild.
For an episode. Yeah,
that is wild. And you got J.K. Simmons in this film that kind of connects
exactly.
To that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, like yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. But I was gonna say too, that little kid, you noticed that was old boy from the Bernie Mac show. Little boy from the Bernie Mac show.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely noticed him, man. And you know, it sucks that he wasn't able to get in more things than I feel like he should have. I feel like he could have been.
Yeah, that is true.
You know what? Who he reminds me of?
Who's that?
What's my man from Everybody Hates Chris?
Oh, Tyler
Williams,
something like that.
I feel like.
He could have been on that trajectory.
I feel like they kind of look similar in their older age. And I feel like he could have been on the same realm or whatever. He's been in a few more things, but yeah, I haven't really seen him out after the Bernie Mac show. But it was cool to see him. It was cool to see him in this movie. And I was like, okay, that's young Marlon. All right, I'll buy that.
Right. Well, we got to hit on the purpose of why they were doing everything they were doing. We got to hit on the heist, man. I think that we've reviewed maybe one other heist movie. I know we did Dead President. But I mean, it's a heist movie, but it's not really all geared around the heist, I guess. I mean, a large portion of it is, but you got a lot of factors in it.
It basically is.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah,
I guess
that's the
whole
point. Yeah,
like,
that's the whole point.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This heist was just. I guess the way I'm saying it is because this heist was just. It just didn't do it for me, man. It was just. I mean, you got a. The heist turned into a dang old lecture about irritable bowel syndrome. Just. It didn't do it for me, man. It's like they did all that work just for that quick. Like. At least let them face some trouble. Like let some guards come out of the blue and make it harder for them. You know, like I just felt like they got it too easily, man.
Oh my goodness! Come on, man. Like they did have some trouble. They had the trouble was that they was trying to do this secretly under the nose of their tenant, Mrs. Madsen. What do you say? What her name is? Munson. Yeah, they were doing under the nose of that while pretending to be a quartet or whatever, a quintet, whatever five is.
she was too easily fooled, man, for a large portion of the film. Like I said, man, at least while they're doing the heist. I mean, she's still functional, man. Come on, man. Give her some credit. She's still functional. Like, I mean, I just felt like they should have had some kind of setback as they were doing the heist, man. Like, they got the money too easily. They got out of there too easily. It was just didn't do it for me.
They had a setback. The setback was the bomb, the pyrotechnics or whatever, didn't go off the way they were supposed to. JK had to go in and try to, you know, fix it. He almost got blown up, which he already blew a pinky off. You know, this was a dangerous job. Okay? We had situations going on. My man blew his index finger off. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, we had issues. And the tunnel, I didn't need security to come and say, oh, they had enough. They already had enough. They kind of sticking somewhat to the original. In the original, they was like, let me see. They were trying to almost blackmail the lady because the elderly lady. Because the elderly lady in the original, she actually was a part of it, but she didn't know. She wound up like taking something and she didn't know that she was a part of it. And she brought this like I don't even know what the hell you call it, this container home that had all the money. And they wound up like kind of trying to blackmail her into going along with it, like, oh, you'll go to jail too. But even still, she wasn't gonna go with it. But still, the point is, I lost my train of thought. But
I think you was gonna try to say that the stakes were there, which yeah. I understand, but it just wasn't enough for me. I'm sorry, man. It just wasn't enough.
So like, you needed a guard to come. You need a big man. You know what? Hey, maybe okay. Worse. You needed big man that was eating all them snacks to come out and say freeze.
Nah, because he was too oblivious to everything. So, but, I mean, they even show where Marlon got away from that so easily just by making a fart joke. Like, it wasn't enough. Sorry.
I felt fine. I felt completely fine because they are, like I said, I didn't need that. They already had the drama built in. They got caught. The tunnel did not explode when they needed it to explode. And when it exploded, it alarmed Mrs. Munson, if I'm saying that name right. I still can't remember.
Yeah, you got it right. You got it right.
And she found out that she seen all that money flying around in that root cellar, and she knew that something was going down. That's all they needed. They didn't need to extend it.
And then we spoke about Miss Munson, the fact that she had bothered the cops for so long about petty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This happens, and she's willing to give them an ultimatum. Like, come on, bro. Like, that, it just, come on, man. You got to admit, that was just a little,
maybe
they kind of missed the mark there.
Maybe she had a little sweet spot. First off, again, you got to understand, this is how the original went down. She was bargaining with them. She was kind of like, hey, I'm going to go, I might go tell. They were keeping it to the original story. Now, you may criticize the original story too with what you said. But the point is, she was giving them, look, she was giving them the opportunity. Hey, come to church with me. She's trying to so-called save their souls. Come to church with me, drop this lifestyle of thievery and coming to the marvelous light of Jesus Christ is what she was trying to do.
Listen, man, all I'm saying is they open the movie up where her going to the police complaining about some hippity hop and her words that somebody's playing their music too loud. Somebody uses your house to rob what, $1.6 million?
Mm-hmm.
They blow up your basement. And you willing to negotiate with them?
Okay.
You don't even want the money.
Okay.
But you willing to negotiate that. But the hippity hop, oh, I got to run to the police and tell them about this.
Hey, you know what? You know what, Brad? I'm going to kind of agree with you on this, man, because that's what I was thinking of in the beginning of the movie. I was like, dang, you just snitching. You just snitching, Grandma. Like, you just snitching on him playing the hip-hop music too loud.
Right.
The Left by Wallet and El Segundo from
and that's
the Tribe Called Quest.
That's full circle. That's something she kept saying, like you were saying about the Coen brothers. She kept saying it.
That's one of their calling cards. Like I said, they'll have them bring that back. Left by Wallet and El Segundo. Like I said, now back in 2004, that's when I first began. You know, hey, this is one of those movies. See, this is crazy. Now, I'm like, memories are kind of coming back on some Slumdog Millionaire type stuff, but in a good way. like memories coming back. But in a good way. I remember when she first was saying that, I was like, what? I was like, what is that? And then I found out, you know, that was an old school hip hop song from, who did I just say? Tribe Called Quest. And I remember listening to that. I was like, oh, okay, that's what that is.
We learning. See, we learning week to week, man. The importance of movies, man, and what all they can do.
100%.
You know,
100%.
They threw you to some classic music.
They threw me into some classic music. That was when I first started listening to old school hip hop. Not necessarily from this movie, but that was the era when I first started listening to some older hip hop music. But the point is,
right.
I can agree with you to a degree. The fact that she went and snitched on that young boy about getting a system, a sound system, basically in his car, I guess. It was like, yo, he right. playing that rap music. And she knew. And she knew the song. She was like, yeah, it's definitely Left My Wallet in El Segundo. She was like, yeah, yeah. That Tribe Called Quest.
She, right.
So I can get down with you a little bit, man, on what you're saying. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
She was snitching. She was snitching right out the gate, but
yeah,
but still, sure. she sure. I felt like though, see, this is what you're disregarding. You disregarding a little bit of the admiration that she kinda had for the PhD. What was his name? GHGW? What was his name in the I'm forgetting.
Talking about Tom Ain't Scared.
Yeah. I'm forgetting. It was like,
see, that was, he had one of them weird names, man.
Not really.
I mean, it was
Professor GH. It's not, it wasn't really that weird.
Well, like, he pronounced the full name, I think.
Oh, he did.
What the GH stood
What was
for.
It like? Gold.
And it was something crazy.
Gold something.
I don't even remember. It was something crazy though.
I don't know. I don't think it was that. I don't think it was that insane. I don't know, man. But the point is, I think she had somewhat of an admiration for the professor, and because he was a slick talking guy, and you know he read a little poetry, and he might have fooled
she
her
fell
just.
For it.
Yeah, she fell for it a little bit, and he might have fooled her just a tad bit, and making her think that the music that they were so-called doing was dedicated to the Lord or whatever, and you know.
Yeah, that is true. He probably did hit her soft spot when he brought up they did gospel music.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
I can see that. But I mean, you know, I mean that's pretty much the heist of the film. Like I said, I didn't really feel it. Jarrell had some, you know. I mean, you made some good points on it as well.
Let me ask you. So, do you think this heist was worse than this?
Yes.
This might need to be a series. Wow. Okay, we going there. Cause this may need to be we may need to go into this, you know, every time we got a heist movie. Cause I think, like you said, I think the only heist movie was Dead Presidents. And you mm-hmm. think this was a worse heist than that?
This was worse. This
okay.
was worse.
How was it worse when they literally, I mean, I know the people that they all died in this movie, but they didn't die before the heist. In Dead Presidents, I mean, they lost a couple of people like right out the gate, and they didn't even do the heist well. At least movie, they got the money out. They got the money out like no issue.
See, you just proving my point. That's the reason Dead President's Heist is better. Because in a real heist, you're supposed to have somebody die.
Why?
Because you're going up against some crazy obstacles.
That's silly. You got to think about, bro.
What you mean?
That's silly as heck. Are you kidding me? So if you're planning a heist, you think the better heist is the one where people get killed?
That's the more realistic heist.
Why are you going with what's realistic? Why are you not going with what's the better what's ideal?
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, the Dead Presidents, you know, Lorenz Tate and all them, they faced some obstacles, some true obstacles. They went up against the Brinks truck people. You know, the police officers was there. I mean, they were surrounded, you know. Of course, you're going to lose people when you go through a real heist. They had a cupcake heist, and there's lady killers, man.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want that? Why would you want to be at risk?
Listen,
you don't understand how much you add in. You add in so much to your sentence, bruh. You think if they went
down.
To jail, if they went to jail, if the lady killer cast went to jail, they would only do a certain amount of time. If the people in dead presidents, they going to jail for life. And you see that okay. my man went to jail for life, the main character.
Yeah, well, look, I can break this down and kill this simply right now. If I'm in a heist, I would want to be a part of the Lady Killer's heist. But if I'm watching a movie for entertainment purposes, action, I don't care if it's action, comedy, I want to see some crazy stuff go down while they're trying to do a heist. Not no easy heist. You're confusing the two. If I'm actually in a heist, of course, I would want everything to go smoothly. But if I'm watching a film, nah, I want to see, hey, if somebody got to die, somebody got to die. You know, you signed up for this, as far as I'm concerned.
See, this is what you're not taking into consideration. This is a Coen Brothers heist, okay? This is not your big city heist where people are just going to die in whatever city they was in. I don't know, in Dead President, Chicago or
yeah, I think it was
Philadelphia or something.
I think.
Whatever they was at. This is your, okay, this is your quiet Midwestern town heist. So I didn't need that. And you talking about some... You judging the heist, like I said, that was the best. They did better than the dead presidents. The goal is to not have a loss of life. And they didn't have any loss of life dealing with that heist. And so that means it was a better heist than dead presidents. You're done.
Listen, just because the heist is more successful doesn't mean it was a better heist. I'm not in that heist.
It literally means that it was a better heist.
Listen to what I'm saying. I tried to break this down. If I'm in the heist, yes, of course. If I was in the heist, yeah, I get what you're saying. But if I'm watching this for my viewing pleasure, I want to see something go down. I want to see some cats get busted. I want to see if somebody got to die, somebody got to die.
I want to see.
Y'all signed up for this trip. Y'all know what we're getting ourselves into. All right? This is what happens in heist.
So basically, you're saying I wanted to see a worse heist. That's basically you're saying. That is what you're saying. Everything happened scot-free and without trouble. Well, not all the way without trouble, but because there was no loss of life, now it's a bad heist to you. That's crazy.
Listen, done. Okay, boom, I'm about to kill you right now. You cook. All right, listen. So, The Dark Knight, that heist, did it go perfectly or did people die? Joker got away, yeah, but people had to die. All right. I don't know if you've ever seen Money Heist. Very popular show on Netflix. Yeah, they got away sometimes. But along the way, people died while trying to commit these heists. That's the running thing that I'm going with. When I'm watching these shows, when I'm watching these movies, if it's got a heist in it, I want to see some action. I want to see something go down. I want to see some stakes. I want to see people coming after you. You know, if a character got to die, a character got to die. That's my point. And I know how much you love that. That's one of the main reasons you hold that Dark Knight film so highly is because of that opening scene, that opening heist scene. Okay. Now, if they go into that heist and they don't have no kind of pushback, no setbacks, and they just get away scot-free, you know, dang on well you would look at that heist and that movie probably a little bit different. You cooked.
Okay, I feel you on that, man. All I'm just saying is I felt like they did what they had to do and they got the trouble that needed to come came. They didn't need to do all that extra stuff. They needed, the story delivered on what it needed to deliver. If they had gotten into some trouble with some guards, it might have took it into a whole nother direction. They did what they needed to do. They needed to get caught by the tenant, Mrs. Munson. So therefore, it happened. So that's all I'm saying. You know, it was okay heist for me. I can't complain. Like I said, the fact that they wasn't able, you know, there was trouble with the bomb and deleting the tunnel. That was enough for me. I was like, you know what I'm saying?
Man, point of the matter, I respect your opinion. that at the end of the day, I expect more from you, man. You know, as a movie lover, a lover of film, writing, dialogue, I just expect you to ask for more, man. That's all I'm saying. This is like a reverse review right now. I can't believe it.
You expected me to need more. I got what I needed. I got everything I needed. She caught them. That's what the story required. Okay, you don't always have to have what you want. What does the story require? You got to think outside yourself, man. Do you get what I'm saying?
Hey,
think outside yourself.
I ain't gonna front. You just killed me with that. I ain't gonna lie. You got me with that. I gotta fall back.
That's it. So, what does
you got? You're right. What does the story require? That is you're right. That's I can't even come back from that.
Right.
I can't even come back from that. But let's talk about the ending, man. I thought it was kind of neat how they kind of brought back the beginning to the end. I don't know if you kind of noticed that. We mentioned Miss Munson and how the police thought she was crazy because she always complained about smaller things and all that stuff. But she's actually going to the police with information. And I think Jarrell kind of mentioned this a little bit. All those main characters ended up dying. Like, none of them made it out. So she goes down to the basement and she sees, what was it, $1.5 million spread out on her table. So, and she knows what they just did. So she goes to the police office and she pretty much lets them know. And they're already on the phone because they heard there was a robbery that took place. I guess word has spread around. She's telling them, I have all the information. I have the money right down in my basement. You know, I'll show y'all. And this was another moment from, I forget the dude's name, but the police officer. He was just like, how about you? Yeah, George Wallace. He was like, how about you keep it? Because that just showed you how much they didn't believe her.
Right.
But in this sense, she was actually being honest and telling the truth about it. And she was like, I think she brought up she wanted to donate it, the money. And he was like, yeah, you can do that. So that's pretty much how it ended, man. She got away. Well, I won't say she got away because she really wasn't a part of it, but the beginning of the story pretty much came full circle back around in her favor, pretty much.
This ending right here reminds me of, I remember reading something like dealing with movies back in the day. I'm talking about way back in the day, like 40s, 30s and stuff like that. Like when audiences were even less inclined to get down with like some of the violence that was happening and some of the immoralities that were going on in some of the films. Like there were so many films and stuff like that where like the people just, it was like they basically said these people can't get away with it. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I remember watching a movie like this movie is back, you know, it's like 1948. It's Treasures of the Sierra Madre and stuff like that. It reminded me of that. It's like that's literally was something, it was like a rule for some of these films. Like these people can't get away with it so we can please the audience. And that's basically what it was. Yeah, it was literally like that. It was like, that's how, you know, that's where we were, you know, at the time. And it's like, so like you said, for the people, for anybody who hasn't watched this film, yeah, you know, the third act is basically all of these men who were pretending to be this, like I said, quintet, after they have been caught, and the tenant knows, Miss Munson, she knows that they've basically gotten this money by ill-gotten gains. They now craft a plot to kill her. And each one by one, they're pulling like the, you know, sticks or straws, and whoever gets the short straw has to go kill Miss Munson. And each one, it like dies in like some comically way, you know, they're like, right, they don't get the job done, and they continue to die off one by one until they all died, you know. So that's right. how yeah that's how we come to the end there. And she thinks like they all just packed up and left, but literally they all just wound up dying. And they kind of like start turning on each other and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And these type of films, man, always make me think about like, what if you was put in a situation like that? What if you literally had that amount of money laid out in front of your face? Like, bam. Hey, what you gonna do? Look at all. I don't remember the amount. How much? It was in the millions, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like 1.5 or 1.6 million.
Okay,
like that.
I think, yeah, that sounds right, I think. But maybe 1.6 million. Like, imagine having that money. Like, you know, so it's the question to you. Like, would you have the integrity to do what needs to be done? Because some of these guys, J.K. Simmons' character, hey, he was about to, you know, flip on the whole team, you know. He tried to skip on out of there. And you know what I'm saying, but that just it's another story of the money, of what money will do to some people, basically.
That is true, and that's crazy because I didn't even really think about that aspect, but that is something that I feel like they probably put in the story, as far as like the greed, you know, the love of money. And all that stuff. So that is
the
aspect of the story.
Yeah, 100%, man.
But yeah, man. So that pretty much wraps up the film to the end of it. And I gotta say, man, you know, my closing thoughts on it, man. You know, you kind of hit on it for me a little bit with the fact you spoke on the old, you know, the old films, how they wouldn't want anybody to get away in the end, none of these characters. And I feel like that's one of the bad parts of this film. Like, you literally had no sympathetic character in the bunch. You had nobody to really feel bad for like that. I mean, it was just, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how they were set up, you know? And I read also in the article.
Nobody?
Somebody had a quote. I mean, as far, I'm talking about as far as in the group that was doing the robbery.
What about Lump?
Okay, they really didn't.
You ain't feel bad for Lump being taken advantage of mentally?
I mean, not really, man. I mean, I don't know if it was because maybe he didn't have that big of a part in the story. Well, not the story, but he didn't really have as many lines, or, you know.
Wow, so he needed a bunch of lines for you to feel bad for him? You're sick.
Not necessarily. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes you watch these films and you don't really feel no type of way about the characters. Like, and I just, all these characters I really didn't feel any type of way about. You know, and I had read a, somebody had wrote in the article a little quote. They basically said that pretty much sum up the characters. They said it was like a bunch of cartoon characters in a dark comedy. You know, like, it really was just, like I said in the beginning, it was incompetent. You know, maybe the most equipped one was the professor because he had a mouthpiece where he can talk people into doing things. But yeah, I mean, I just didn't really have any sympathy for none of the main characters as far as in the robbery group. So, and I already told you how I felt about the heist. If I'm gonna be honest, I did watch the whole film, but it was points where I was kind of checking out. And I had to rewind a little bit. So with all that being said, I gotta give this a 2.
Ooh.
2 rewinds out of 5 for me, man.
It went down. Oh,
yeah,
wow,
man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I'm going 4.25 rewinds, okay?
What?
I'm going 4.25 rewinds. Hey, this movie was not that bad. And I feel like I will watch this movie again. Like, it had its comedy. I like some of the characters. You know what I'm saying? It's not the best of the Coen Brothers films, but it's rewatchable to me. I feel like I'll come back to it. The heist, I think better of the heist than you did. You know what I'm saying? Again, I like the different group of characters that they had. You know, some of it, the story wasn't the greatest, but something inside of it, I feel like this is a movie that really deserves the term underrated. People use this way too much. Okay, people use this word way too damn much. You know what I'm saying? Just in anything. I heard somebody say Terrell Owens is underrated. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? You know what I'm saying? You know,
they would have been better saying something like they feel he doesn't get the respect he deserves. Underrated? No.
I guess. But the point is, I feel like this is a worthy word for this film. I feel like it's an underrated comedy, and I feel like it's somewhat rewatchable. I've given it a 42.5, man. It did the trick. I haven't watched it in a long time, but it brought back the same memory that I had like when I watched it the first time. I thought it was still kind of funny. I laughed at I laughed a couple of times here and there. Not a perfect film, like I said, not a perfect film, but I enjoyed it. That's all I can tell you. I enjoyed it, and I may come back to it.
To be one of the widest ranges of ratings we've given, as far as I feel like, and that's what we're going to start doing for y'all as well. We're going to eventually bring all the ratings back from the films we reviewed and kind of talk about it, go over the ratings we've given these films. But I feel like this is, most times we're a little bit closer in the ratings for these films, and this one is probably the most furthest away, I feel like.
I knew that we was going to be far away from the beginning. I was like, I could just already get the sense of how you felt about it. I was like, yeah, we definitely going to be apart, because this was just a movie that it stood up to me. You know, when we say, you know, we ask ourselves, were we looking at the content through rose-colored lens? I mean, I know you said you hadn't seen it before, but for me, it remains the same from when I watched it back in 2004. It's still just as funny. I still appreciate some of the characters, some of the dialogue. So, 42.5 rewinds, man. A good film.
I respect that.
Yeah.
Now, next week, we're going to let y'all know what we got going on. Next week, we're going to be doing 2001 Baby Boy, starring Tyrese Gibson, got Snoop Dogg, Zahari P. Henson, you know, it's classic.
Woo! 2001 Baby Boy. Yeah, that should be interesting, man.
Yeah,
I'm not even gonna go into it. We'll save that for next week or next episode, but we're gonna leave you with the trailer for that. Jamel picked this film. I'm just throwing that out there. I damn sure didn't. 2001 Baby Boy. And we say peace.
Peace.
Dear Lord, please forgive us for all the sins we have brought upon us. And look down upon us with forgiveness for all the sins we will have in the future. I know you understand that we are imperfect, but we try, Lord. Show us the way, and if you can't show us the way, then forgive us for being lost.
John Singleton, creator of the breakthrough film, Boys in the Hood, brings you a new look at life in the hood.
My boy, I love you, girl. You got my son, and you're probably gonna be my wife.
I got a date. Talking about I look all right. I look good. It's time for you to grow up and be a man.
Be a man? What you mean, like you?
No, you can never be like me.
Tired of you cheating on me. What is all of that, Jody?
That's breaking the code, baby. I wouldn't break the code. I respect the code.
What's this?
Sensitive ass females. Y'all some unstable creatures.
You need to shut up.
I ain't gonna say the B word. I'm gonna say unstable creatures.
Ain't that the way it go?
You know what your problem is, baby boy?
You need to stop sitting around here trying to blame everybody for your problem.
You my girl.
I already told you you can't stay here. My baby daddy ain't having it.
Ooh, Jody? Man, don't be calling my house asking to speak to my woman.
What's happening, baby?
Who we gonna kill, Jody Joe?
Do something!
He's liable to come through with all his homies and shoot me, my girl, and my baby.
Ah, Jody!
Mama!
Ready to go to war, huh?
Ain't trying to be no killer.
Columbia Pictures presents One Man's Fight to Change the Game.
Yeah, I'd rather be with you. I'd rather be with you, yeah.
A film by John Singleton, Baby Boy.
Stay up, Baby Boy.
I got you.
Oh, yes, I do.